or jobettes are being created, and the one percenters are prospering. The glue that holds our diverse society together is the egalitarian ethic of the common good. As my old Texas daddy used to put it to me, everybody does better when everybody does better.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Thanks for listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. My name is Darnell. We're glad you've tuned in to Eco Radio KC. On today's program, host Richard Mabian and his guest, Maurice Copeland, pay tribute to our veterans and discuss issues of exposure to hazardous chemical used in warfare. Stay tuned. But first, the environmental news for the week of November 11th. Democracy Now! Reports, in Syria, President Trump has approved an expanded military mission to secure oil fields, and so hundreds of U.S. troops will remain in Syria despite President Trump's repeated claims he was bringing the troops home. The mission complicates the U.S. troops' role in Syria and could bring them into direct confrontation with the Russians or Syrian military. A group of scientists has issued a warning that the climate crisis has arrived and is accelerating faster than most scientists expected. It is more severe than anticipated, threatening natural ecosystems, according to the new statement signed by over 11,000 scientists from over 150 countries, published in the journal Bioscience. The scientists warn of untold suffering unless the global society undergoes a major transformation in order to address the crisis. In the Pacific Northwest, five activists were arrested for blockading part of the port of Vancouver, Washington, last week to prevent a shipment of pipeline intended to be used in an expansion of Canada's Trans Mountain Pipeline. The Trump administration has formally notified the United Nations that it will withdraw the United States from the historic Paris Climate Agreement. The U.S. is the world's largest historic greenhouse gas emitter. It will become the only country outside the agreement. Lawrence Journal World Reports. The Lawrence Sustainability Advisory Board previously recommended fee for disposable plastic and paper bags, but it has now updated that recommendation to indicate it would also support a ban. Now, our show.
Good evening, everyone. This is Richard Mabian, and it is my pleasure to be here this evening on this Labor Day holiday. Not Labor Day, excuse me, y'all, on this Veterans Day holiday. As a veteran, I take honor in being able to be the host for this show. I feel like that it brings me back home. I'm a Vietnam vet, so I have an era that I represent, and I love being here. Have a good show for you tonight. Before I go into it, I can't help but mention the weather that we're dealing with. It's unbelievable, and I want everybody to be safe out there. We were quite fortunate, especially over in Wyandotte County. We didn't get as much snow on the ground as they had expected, and the streets over there really weren't that bad. You got more over in Missouri than we did in Kansas City, Kansas, because when I was coming to the station, some of the side streets, as usual, were the kind where you had to be careful, making sure you didn't run into any ice, hidden black ice, I think that's what y'all call it. And hopefully when we leave here and go home, that the streets have melted from the rush hour traffic and find ourselves with that stuff freezing back. But other than that, everybody be safe. Be careful. new drivers, watch yourself. Young drivers, some of you, this is the first time you've been out there on the road in this kind of conditions. My next door neighbor, she's 16 and she just started driving. And her father had to go out this morning and pull the car out for her because he was a little leery about getting in the car. And I saw she made it back home from school and the streets were pretty cool. So I was real proud of her. We all watching her because this is her first time being out. Okay, got a good show for you tonight. And to kind of set the tempo for what we're going to be doing, I'm going to read a passage that deals with the guest that I have here. There's two people here in the studio with me, but one of them in particular, and I'm going to try to read this. Y'all excuse me for the lighting and how difficult it is to read with a mic in your mouth. Maurice Copeland wins recognition from Kansas City by Tom Kramer. Recently, I got a Facebook link posted in support of Jeremy Corbyn, a progressive politics in the United Kingdom. The posting led to a copy of Rosa Parks' 1955 U.S. mugshot with a quote, "You must never be fearful about what you're doing when it is right." I couldn't resist a quick thought about Maurice Copeland. On first seeing that quote, I had observed him for 10 years or more speaking as an advocate for the sick and dying workers from Bannister's Federal Complex in Kansas City, Missouri. The workers became ill from toxins at the complex plant for making parts for nuclear weapons. The workers needed help and support from the government and the companies they worked for and rarely got it. Sometimes I was on hand at public events related to sick and dying workers and would see Maurice confronted and a time or two escorted out of the event by police officers, apparently in connection with some sort of fear on the part of some government or corporate official. Now, I do not believe they were ever actually afraid of Maurice himself, because I never once saw or even heard him exhibiting any threatening violence at any time. But Maurice often spoke loudly, clearly, and boldly on behalf of Cold War soldiers working at the Bannister Federal Complex and in support of truth and justice, and I think that frightens some. The truth can be inconvenient and even frightening. As Rosa Parks suggested, people can and perhaps should become fearful of what they are doing when at some level they know what they are doing is not right. On October the 3rd, the Kansas City, Missouri City Council formally recognized Maurice Copeland for his work over the years. A brief entry into the City Council docket noted a resolution recognizing the importance of Mr. Maurice Copeland's effort to make the lives lost due to workers not being properly warned or protected a priority of the city of Kansas City. A number of us were sitting in the front two rows of the seating and city council member chamber. When Maurice came in, he asked us to walk up with him when it was time, and we did. Councilman Brandon Ellington read the proclamation, including, "Whereas longtime activist and whistleblower of the Kansas City Bannister Federal Weapons Complex, Mr. Copeland has refused to give up on fighting for the 2,500 or more employees who were exposed to over 785 known toxins, according to EPA. And Maurice designated his friend, Sister Kaya, to speak for him. Urged by Ellington and Mayor Quentin Lucas graciously allowed a few more words for Maurice, including the opportunity to say, The list of known toxins at the Bannister Federal Complex mentioned in the resolution had been enlarged from 785 to more than 2,000. Maurice, we give you a hand. Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. When I knew that I was going to be hosting the show on Veterans Day, I knew that there was no better person for me to have as a guest than you, especially after receiving this proclamation. Say hello to folks, Maurice.
Hello, everybody. Glad to be here. Being a veteran, yes, I am. Two days ago was my 55th anniversary. I went into the United States Army in 1964, November the 9th. This is November the 11th.
Come on.
So this is 55 years.
Oh, I mean, tell me about it. And then to go along with us, we brought in who I consider to be our connector between the two of us. She doesn't know that, but that's what I consider her. And that's Ann Sullenthor. Ann, will you say hello to folks for me, please?
Yes, hello. I am a connector. I love connecting people and networking. Love it.
So now here's where we're going to go with. First of all, we're going to open up the line. I'm not looking for people to be calling in with no dissertation or anything, but if someone had some memory of Maurice that you would like to share or some of the things we speak about, you would like to speak to, by all means, please give us a call. The number here is 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. In fact, sitting out in the green room, I had to give Maurice, of course, he'll remember, to figure out when it was he and I met. And we got it narrowed down to, I used to sell African art, for those of you who didn't know it, over on 39th and State Line there, where all the little boutiques are. I used to be next to the Italian Ice Place, for those of you who can remember that. It's been a little while, but I was there with the Sacred Art. Regina Copanol was my partner in business over there, along with artists from all over the Kansas City metropolitan area, and I had the African art section. And every morning I come to work, there'd be some little painting on the daggum door. We couldn't figure out who was coming by here and putting these paintings on the door. And then finally one day we discovered that it was Maurice, and that's how long it's been. That's how long it's been that we've been knowing each other. And this was actually before I went into the environmental world, which means when I did, after 9/11 and everything just went bottom up for small businesses, I was also had a maintaining a janitorial company back then, and it went belly up, but and we had to regroup and get started again, and I ended up in this environmental world, and lo and behold, Maurice's other side of him came out. He went from being the greatest artist in the world to the whistleblower. And we formed back there an organization, had a conference that we put on called Breaking the Silence in Kansas City, Kansas. That was my first official environmental, I guess you could say, action. Because as it is now, the inner city is pretty much clueless when it comes to having an environmental consciousness. And so we wanted to figure out a way to introduce the environmental movement to the inner city, the low-income community. And that's where we got started. Well, and the reason Ann's sitting here, the very first session, that was 2007. We were at the Reardon Center in Kansas City, Kansas. We had it set up that we would get started on Friday night at 5 o'clock. And on this particular one, we went all the way through Sunday at noon. Boy, we was there. And they gave everybody that was involved in the environmental world a chance to come out and be heard and be seen and let people talk to them. We had an event. I know I'm going to stop talking in a second, but I want to set the tempo of what we're dealing with here. We had an event that one of my persons who I'm still engaged with right now, named Barry Dyker, I always jack up his name, but he sold solar panels. And I had this, and I still ask people today when I go places and meeting, how many of you in here have ever touched a solar panel? And it's amazing how few people, even to this day, have never in their life put their hand on a solar panel. So he would come in on Friday night and put up a solar panel right up in the front there by his little table. And man, by Sunday, there'd be so many fingerprints on that thing, he had to clean it off every day. But that's what that conference was about, to expose the public to what this environmental movement was about. There Maurice was. I knew he was there. I think he even had a role. He was going to speak because we had become really actively engaged in what was going on. And then there was a lady sitting there at a table. I think she was either giving away light bulbs or telling people about light bulbs, and that was Ann Sullivan. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
You remember sitting there?
Breaking the silence.
Breaking the silence. And the reason this is important is because that began this relationship that has us sitting here right now. Yeah. That we met each other, and the only other person that's not here, and I was just with her Friday, is Althea Moses. Althea was with EPA then, with Environmental Justice, and her, and I can remember her and Maurice going off to the side to have their very first initial conversation about that daggum banister conference.
Right.
Maurice, come talk to us, brother.
Oh, well, let me say this. When Ann and I got together, that was dynamic.
Yes.
Kansas City ain't never been the same. That's right. The Bannister Federal Complex ain't never been the same.
That's right.
We formed a brother and sisterhood that it's going to be here forever. You know, it's we opened up each other's eyes.
It is.
To the movement that Ann had going on and I had going on. This is the importance of allying with people that are in the same line that you are, that have the same interests, that have the same concerns. And that's what we did. And this will never be broken.
Yes.
It'll never be broken. I appreciate Ann so much.
Yeah.
And her connections with Peace Work and the Physician for Social Responsibility.
Yes.
I don't know what else to say. Well,
nothing you can say about that at all. That's why when I saw her Friday, the first thing I told her, you got to be there. We can't do this without you, because I think this is a historical thing that's going on right now. I mean, when I sit and think about the daily news about Trump and the whistleblower and all that kind of stuff that's going on, I mean, you know, it's really great to know that you took your role. You stood out front. You made it known that this is what you was doing. And like what Tom Cramer wrote about, you took that responsibility. If you're going to do it, and you know you can, regardless of how people feel about you or think about you, if you know what people are doing is wrong, it's be the person that you want to be and let folks know this is what was wrong, and that's what you did.
Let me tell you what happened to show you how actually, you know, I guess it was flattering to me. I didn't know at the time. Daniel Ellsberg's people.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Albuquerque, New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And you're wonderful. And we have been everywhere. We've been in Washington, D.C., Albuquerque, New Mexico, all over the place, talking to senators and all types of people out there. But Daniel Ellsberg people approached me out there. They didn't know me, but they wanted me to join.
Who's Daniel Ellsberg? Who's he?
The Pentagon Papers.
Okay, all right, yeah, come on.
They wanted me to join in their little organization as a whistleblower. Yeah, because they heard what was going on, and they heard me, and I told them no. And I'm glad I told them no, and it was something told me to say no, because I did not want them to shut me up.
Yeah.
I wanted no one to shut me up. I wanted to tell this story, and one I need everybody here in Kansas City to tell the truth.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, don't be scared.
See, she's saying that. Tell us what it was that you, because see, there's people listening that don't know. That's why I had you say who Ellsberg was. Tell them what happened.
At Honeywell?
Well, tell them what the whistleblowing was about.
Well, actually, let me move 10 years. All right, I'll move 10 years down the road. I started this in 2000, the year 2000. I'm going to move to 2010.
Okay.
2010, from 2000 to 2010, I fought these people about not telling the truth about what was going on at Bannister Complex, and people were getting sick, and that they weren't doing the compensation program and the health care program properly. In 2010, the GSA administrator, and this GSA administrator is over this region, seven states, five states, I don't know how many it is.
There.
He's over the whole region. He admitted, this is an admission, people, and I want y'all to understand it, because now y'all know when people say that they mislead people, when the government agency says that they misled government agencies, that is a federal crime. And that's what he said in 2010. That's what I had been saying all along. And he did it in 2010. They publicized it. It was in the newspapers all the way to Washington, D.C. Everybody knew about it. What has been done with the admission? What has been done with that admission of guilt about lying? What was the ramifications of them saying that they misled these agencies, the CDC, the IG, the Missouri Division of Natural Resources, a whole bunch of agencies? What is the ramifications of that? And I'm going to tell you what it is, people. I want y'all to understand. This is why I'm like I am, and I'm going to be. People died.
Yep.
People are dying now.
Yep.
Families are contaminated. This city is contaminated. Look at what they just did out there, folks. And they haven't told you that all that dust that was blowing in your face while they were cleaning that plant up.
Yep.
That is just not dust, people. They found radioactive material on the grounds.
Yep. Let's go back to say where you are. I want to make sure the people are understanding what we're talking about. Yep. Bendix was making parts for bombs in the what era?
It's because you started in 1949.
49, yeah. But you got in when you got out. You got hired there when you came out of the military, right?
Yeah.
So here you are. We got folks working in there at the plant, and they're making parts for nuclear weapons. And they really didn't do a thorough job of explaining to the people who was there what they were actually working with. So you had folks that was being exposed to a menagerie of chemicals and was ended up taking those chemicals home with them on their clothes and the whole bit. Is that correct? And that's what was going on?
Yeah, and radioactive substances, beryllium.
Yes.
All kinds of things that are inhaled or, you know, can make you sick over time. And then you don't even realize why are you sick.
Yes, and that's what was going on. Now, Maurice was working as a supervisor. Was you a supervisor?
Yes, I was.
He was on the supervising the line or something, and he started realizing that there's a problem here that needs to be addressed. And that's when he said he started back there in 2000 trying to explain to people, we got a problem up in here, you know. And then people were older folks were starting to get sick and dying. And
funerals everywhere.
And nobody's doing anything. And the only person that had the guts to stand up and be heard was Maurice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's Miss Ann. You come on in. You.
Yeah, the first time that I got involved with Maurice, it was I went over to his apartment just to talk about things, and there was artwork all over every inch of his apartment walls. I was like, oh my God. So I'm an artist also. So I felt right at home. And so we started working together, and we had town halls where the workers and their families could come together and network together. And I remember one time we even got the county to, oh my God, that was a powerful
fantastic
witness. Oh my God. There's people crying. They were telling all about their loved ones and the horrible things they had gone through the years. And I understood from some of these testimonies that when the workers were at work, they were not explained at all what right. they were dealing with. It could even be radioactive substances. And one lady, they even came to her house in what do you call those hazmat suits?
Yeah.
And they cleaned up her house and her car, and they never did tell her what she was exposed to. And she nearly died 2 or 3 times. She had lots of surgeries. And they finally found out it was promethium, and that was because of Russ Potosik on Channel 41.
See that? And then we're going to come back to him. I'm going to say he's after the break. But also when you dealt with Althea at EPA, it had to do with a child care or something that they had built on top of the place where the chemicals had been stored or was stored or by the water. Crazy. What was that? What was that about?
Okay, now that is an open issue right now.
Yeah.
Because I finally met the and I'm going to say this, and I want the city of Kansas City to understand. Your health director, Rex Archer, I saw him at a forum at UMKC. They had a speaker, and I asked the speaker if he knew anything about the contamination at Bannister Complex. And he told me, he said, the man sitting behind you is the one that you should talk to. It's Rex Archer, the Kansas City health director. And I turned around, and I said, Rex, what do you think about what they're doing and cleaning up at the Bannister Complex? He said, well, you know, I haven't been out there in 7 years, and I'm really not up on it that much. But he said emphatically, if they had ever built, this is what he said, if they had ever built a daycare center out there, I would be very concerned. Well, I want people to understand that that daycare center had already been there
yep.
for 10 years. And at the time that he said that, you're talking about 17 years. And he would be very concerned. I have been trying to get an answer from him ever since then. I told the city council person, Ms. Melissa Robinson, I'm naming names. I told Melissa Robinson, who worked for him, find out. She's a city council person now. Find out what his concerns would be. She's been ducking me. She's been ducking to find out. I want to know, and I will know.
That's what whistleblowers do, people.
That's what we do.
That's what they do. All right, we're going to get ready to take a break here. It's going to be a couple of minutes early, but I think that'll give us a chance to get ready for the next part. The number again here is 816-931-5534. If you'd like to join us in this call, in this conversation, just come on, as long as you don't try to take it over. 816-931-5534.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lund, and this is Climate Connections. Wilson Woody Powell served in the Air Force during the Korean War, but in the decades since, he's become staunchly anti-war. Through the group Veterans for Peace, Powell has spoken out against conflicts, sought justice for civilian victims, and mentored veterans with PTSD. Now he's turned his attention to yet another cost of war, the climate.
War plays a big role in climate change. All the wars that have fought over fossil fuels, for instance. Wars that have fought on smaller levels over hardwood forests in South and Central America. The carbon footprint of the U.S. military itself, which is very, very large.
Powell recently drafted a resolution that urges all Veterans for Peace chapters to take climate action and help educate students and others about the issue.
I was brought up during World War II. I was 9 years old when it started. And I saw the mobilization that went on. where we completely switched over our manufacturing facilities from making refrigerators and automobiles to making tanks and planes and so forth.
He says it will take a similar level of commitment to defeat global warming, and he hopes veterans across the country can help win this fight. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Well, I guess I better do something with that old thing. Fine, honey, I'll get rid of it. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, you can turn your used-up car, boat, truck, van, or motorcycle into the programs you know and love right here on KKFI. All you have to do is go to kkfi.org, find the support tab to donate your wheels, rudders, or handlebars, or you can call 816-931-3122, ask for the development department. That's 816-931-3122, or go to kkfi.org. Thank you so much for your support, and remember, you can hear your old ride in your new one.
This retired federal employee, Bill Claus, encouraging all my federal employee friends to please consider supporting KKFI during this year's combined federal campaign. That's CFC code 21994. Just a few dollars a week on payroll deductions won't mean much to you, but it'll mean big bucks to us at KKFI. So please consider supporting KKFI. That's agency code 21994.
All right, this is Richard Mabian, and we're back with you again. That number again, I'll give it out, 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. That's if you want to join it. Well, I'm sitting here with Maurice Copeland and Ann Sullentharp, and we're talking about, first of all, the proclamation that Maurice has finally been able to win as a Kansas City hero as far as his whistleblowing was concerned with the Bannister Federal Complex. And Ann and I, we're just here because it was Ann and Maurice met at the Breaking the Silence Conference, and they teamed up, and they became a big 1-2 punch, and have been together since then, and all of us have been each other's support system. I'm always here for them, and they know that. So, Maurice, you held, I remember coming to a session. We talked about the difficulty in getting them to understand, and we talked about the guy that finally admitted that there was some problems, some infractions that it went on, and then it got to the point that you started working with the guy from the 41 radio. Now, I remember going to the out there off 103rd or somewhere off 103rd and
Holmes.
430 at Holmes, mm-hmm. And they have a union hall or something out there, right?
Yeah.
And what was tell us about that? What was that about?
Yeah. Oh well, I like I said, I've been doing this since 2000,
right?
And I have had many town halls before 2000, and up until around 2010. I finally hit the government enough that I set up a town hall. I didn't know where it was going to be. I got in touch with the lady at the Labor Department, Denise Brock, and I hounded her to have a town hall here. I hounded her, and I wanted I wanted every level of government invited to that. We could not get our congressman to sign on. So we went on, we're going to have it anyway. And then the congressman calls 2 days before, the town hall and said, I'll be there. And he claimed that town hall for himself. He was responsible for that town hall. No, he wasn't. But that town hall, what had been happening, we had been making progress all along. You know, the empty wagon, to make the noise, you get something done. And we had been getting things done, getting people adjudicated, getting their claims processed,
okay,
and stuff like that. So we have made progress.
So the government admitted that there was some problems.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and so then they started, came up with some agreement on how they would service, for lack of a better word, those people who had been affected. But wasn't there a case where they had to prove it? Did they have to prove?
Yeah.
What was that about?
Yeah, well, you have to prove that your illness was caused by the contamination at the place. You have to do that. And they have to approve that you proved it. In other words, you have to get their doctors to say that you approved it. Your doctor can say that you have cancer, that you had cancer, but and he could say that it was probably because of working at the Bannister Complex. No, they want it more likely than not. And the more likely than not has to come from the Labor Department's doctors. Mm. No, no. Now let me tell you what they're doing, because I knew we were going to get there. Let me tell you what they're doing. I've got a person, more than one, that has thyroid cancer. Thyroid cancer is a very common cancer at Honeywell, at Bendix, at whatever you want to call the place. Very common. Now, he has been approved. He just got approved. And then they sent him a letter and says, we're going to give you an impairment rating. An impairment rating. Now, let me tell you what an impairment rating is. An impairment rating is going to say, well, you have cancer, but your cancer is not bad enough for us to give you your compensation. So we're going to rate you at a 10%, where 10 years ago, 20 years ago, when this stuff started, they were automatically, people that had the cancers that we could prove that were out there, you automatically get the compensation. You had $250,000 or $150,000. Now they're going to start rating people for the if you have borreliosis. Well, instead of getting the $150,000, they're going to rate your borreliosis, where you have a little bit of borreliosis. No, no, come on, folks. That's why we need to have this town hall that's going to be coming up.
Yeah.
That the city is going to sponsor. I want y'all to understand that. Thank Brandon Ellington for the job that he's doing.
Yes.
That we're going to have a city hall, a town hall sponsored by the city. And Ann had mentioned something that was very dear to me. And people might not like what I'm getting ready to say. There was a guy. His name was Mike Sanders. Mike Sanders did the best job for me that he could ever do. He opened up that building down there, that county building. He might as well have given me the key. And we had a town hall. That place was jam-packed.
What was he, county administrator or something? What was he?
County exec.
The county exec, yeah.
County exec.
Right.
He said that it was his duty to let the people hear what we had to say. We invited the people in from Honeywell, and it was the best one we ever had.
It was right.
We haven't
awesome.
Had one since. Right. We haven't had one since. We even had ex state representative to come there and testify that he was sick because of that place.
And even Respetosic now has borreliosis.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
yeah.
How in the heck did that happen?
Now, you hearing
Who
something?
Who is that now?
Respetosic was the Channel 41 TV reporter. And he was in Honeywell a few times, but, I mean, how did he get borreliosis?
The way you get borreliosis, folks, let me tell you, they just tore that plant down. That's how you get borreliosis.
Yeah.
All you people that work in that area, all you people that live in that area, that dust that's been settling in your house, that dust that you've been driving by in your car with your little baby in the back seat, and that's been getting in your eyes, and you're wiping your eyes, and you get grit is in my eyes. That may not be grit. That may be beryllium. That may not be grit. That may be uranium. That may not be grit. It's a lot of different chemicals. 2,410 chemicals.
I want to explain something. This is something that I learned not seeing right or wrong. Beryllium is based on a degree of sophistication, because you have beryllium at General Motors.
Yes.
Understand? So I want folks to understand, because you would go, well, how were they allowed to have that there? Well, they can have it there if they claim it's at a certain degree, a certain level that's within government guidelines. That's that famous word they use in our environmental world, is that it's within government guidelines. But it really wasn't.
No, it wasn't.
But that's how they were able to say that they didn't have that problem, so they couldn't say that anymore.
Oh, no. Well, I got big problems with that. Because the limit the allowable limit,
yeah,
allowable exposure limit. How much can affect you?
Right.
Well, you can read all the books that you want, but you could take. I'm going to be very generous with the city. I'm going to be very, very generous. I'm going to give you a teaspoon of beryllium. Okay? And this is what I'm saying. And I will take that teaspoon out to Arrowhead Stadium, and I will let the wind blow. And it will affect a hell of a lot of people. Let me tell you what the government says. What can fit on a pinhead? On a pinhead, they said that would affect what you would let out in a stadium. I give you a teaspoon. The government said a pinhead. This is what they said.
Yeah.
Now, come on, people.
Yeah. This is where my issue about climate change or consciousness, you know, environmental consciousness, you know, you can argue all you want and it needs to be done, but at the same time we need to be educating the public, and the public needs to understand what we're sitting there talking about. You know, if we were sitting there talking about the quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs, the phone would be jumping off the hook, because people, that's a popular thing for people to do. But we're sitting there talking about something that can affect you and your child and your life gene wise for years to come.
Years. Generations.
Okay?
Yes.
And the lines are silent because of a lack of consciousness. And I know I have environmental people that are listening. But yeah, the extent of what we're talking about, because you don't have a solution. You know, America's a solution-oriented world. If you don't have a solution, you keep your mouth shut. But we're at a stage where we need to be empowering people with knowledge. I won't say educating, because people get intimidated when you say you're educating them. But we need to be empowering people with knowledge. Now, since we went down that road, we're talking about something that happened. We're talking about a plant that's been closed down, torn down, sitting over there with the dust. And tell us about what happened in Memorial Day.
Well, Memorial Day, there were 17 of us that went out to the nuclear bomb plant and bomb parts plant, and we crossed the line, we trespassed, we were arrested, handcuffed, and photographed and processed. And then November 1st, we went to court, and the judge, Martina Peterson, was excellent. She let us testify, whatever we wanted to say. We talked for 4 hours. She listened to everything we had to say, and she did find us guilty, but she did not throw the book at us. She did not put us in jail. We just have to pay court costs and probation costs and not go near two miles from the plant for a year. And so I think she was very respectful to us.
But the main thing is, it's still an issue. It's still being handled like you all are wrong for trying to get this passed. I hear we have a call. Caller, you're on the line. Will you give us your first name and the part of the city you're calling from, please? Hello?
Hi, my name is A, and I'm calling from Kansas City.
You say your name is A?
A, yes.
Okay, I'm glad to meet you, A, and you're calling from Kansas City. Let's go ahead. Let me hear your comment.
Well, I wanted to thank Mr. Maurice Copeland for his dedication and his commitment and his fight to making everyone aware and trying to get everybody compensated that has been affected by this, because I know when you're going against those people who think they're in charge, a.k.a. the government, it can be dangerous, and I just want to thank him for continuing all these years that he's been doing it to make sure everybody is aware and safe, and those that have been affected compensated in to some degree.
All right.
So thank you.
Thank you, A, for calling in. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
All right, we're getting down to that time of the program where we be leaving here. We've got a little time left. And I'm going to let Ann speak here
just
on
very,
her.
Very briefly.
Very briefly on
the
her.
The two things that could make us extinct, that could wipe out all life on Earth, are nuclear weapons and climate crisis. It's an emergency. We're down to the wire on this. And there's a booklet out I'd like to I recommend to everyone. It's by Tim and Wallace. It's on the nuclearband.us website. It's called Warheads to Windmills, and it's a plan to get good-paying jobs for people by taking all the money and the wherewithal from nuclear weapons production to make windmills and solar panels and things like that, and we can eliminate the two worst problems we have.
Okay, well, that's where I'm at with this, is where do we go from here? Maurice, how much more information do you have on that town hall? I heard you when the mayor allowed you to say a little bit more when he talked, what Tom talked about, that he gave you time to say some more when you told him about the toxic figures going from 700 up to 2,000. But you also talked about this town hall. How would you like to see that happen?
Just similar to what Mike Sanders did, the city notifies people that we're going to have a town hall about to banish the federal complex and let the sick workers and their families come and let you know what is going on with them. Let you know how things have changed, how they've changed. So they started the program off right.
Right.
Bill Clinton said exactly what he should have said. He couldn't have written it any better. He said that they did that, that they kept us in that environment without our knowledge. You know, the federal government tells you to keep your mouth shut.
Right.
And people are very obedient when the federal government tells you to keep your mouth shut, plus they're paying you good money. You know, and you really don't know what's going on.
Right.
You know.
If I'm not mistaken, our congressman worked there, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't want to go there.
Yeah, okay, we'll leave that alone. But I was thought that it was a time that he was actually there on the job. I'm going to end it with this. There's two or three things here. And A, I really appreciate you calling in. Because, see, you have people out here that are doing what the three of us do. And we're doing that for you. We're doing that for the people who live in this city. Maurice's case, he's been finding satisfaction and financial support for people who have suffered the consequences of a illness that they had no idea that they was even being subjected to on a daily basis whenever they were at work. You know, this is what gets me. We have a pledge drive. And, you know, I just looked at the board in there. And no one who listens to our program gives a dime. We got one person out there, and if she'd been around, I'm sure she'd have done something for us. And I think that's a shame, because we are basically doing the things we're doing and putting ourselves out here on Front Street for you. This program was formed the only point in town on a regular basis to be able to keep you informed of what's going on in this city. I mean, if we don't do it, no one's doing it. We'll have a Flint problem here that'll last for 2 years if it wasn't for the fact that you have folks like us out here on the firing line that are doing everything we can to make sure we keep you informed. So all I'm saying, I asked you, and we got to go, to think about us when we have them fund drives and give us a call and help us out. Thank you, and we'll see you next year. Happy Veterans Day to all you fellas out there and ladies out there that have been part of our U.S. government military.
Here's the calendar of events for the week of 11/11. On Tuesday, November 12th, 5 to 8 p.m., there'll be a Climate Craft Beer Benefit at the Beer Station, 1201 Gregory Boulevard, Kansas City, Missouri. Climate Council of Greater Kansas City asks us to join them. Part of the sales will help fund Kansas City's 2020 Earth Day celebration. Tuesday, November 12th, 7 p.m., the meeting of the Topeka Sierra Club will be a lobbyist look at the Kansas Corporation Commission. This will be at the Unitarian Fellowship, 4775 Southwest 21st Street, Topeka, Kansas. Tuesday, November 12th, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m., The Green Business Network Fall Social will be at the Boulevard Brewing Company, 2501 Southwest Boulevard, Kansas City, Missouri. Businesses can submit a sustainability project to be highlighted at the event. Register in advance at bridgingthegap.org. Friday, November 15th, 10 a.m., will be the November Climate Conversations at Colonial Church, 7039 Mission Road, Prairie Village, Kansas, sponsored by the Resilient Activist. This month's topic, Creating Conscious Holidays. Friday, November 15th, 12 noon, Fridays for the Future, weekly strikes at Wesco Beach, 1445 Jayhawk Boulevard, University of Kansas, and City Hall, 6 East 6th Street, Lawrence, Kansas. Sunrise Movement will strike in Lawrence from noon to 1 p.m. every Friday. This is a chance to remind everyone of the urgency of climate action. Saturday, November 16th, 10 a.m., Drawdown, Getting Into Action Workshop Series will be at Temple Buddhist Center, 707 West 47th Street, Kansas City, Missouri. Saturday, November 16th, 5 p.m., Dinner and a Movie Fundraiser at Rolling Hills Presbyterian, 9300 Knoll Avenue, Overland Park, Kansas. Heart of America Indian Center, doing business as Kansas City Indian Center, and Rolling Hills Presbyterian Church will have an Indian taco at 5 o'clock, Cherokee Word for Water movie at 6:30 p.m. Saturday, November 16th, 8:45 a.m. to 3:45 p.m., Perry Lake Hiking Trail Maintenance, Perry, Kansas, organized by the Kansas Group of the Sierra Club at Perry Lake Trail, Section 2 East, Ozaukee, Kansas. Contact Steve Hassler at Hassler, H-A-S-S-L-E-R, at planetkc.com or call 913-707-3296. On Sunday, November 17th, 1 to 3 p.m., the Baker Wetlands National Natural Landmark Walk and Talk is organized by the Thomas Hart Benton Group of the Sierra Club at 1365 North 1250 Road, Lawrence, Kansas. Contact Eileen McManus at 816-523-7823. This next Monday, November 18th, 11:45 a.m. to 1 p.m., Climate Reality, Truth in Action is hosted at the Central Exchange, 1020 Central, Suite 100, Kansas City, Missouri. Contact Central Exchange on Facebook. Please listen to Eco Radio KC next week. We enjoy bringing it to you. These items and more can be viewed at the Eco Radio KC Facebook page. Stay tuned now for Fiesta Music Hall.
The Great Lakes Observing System on this current cast. The Great Lakes are wonderful places for boating and fishing, but they can also be dangerous, so it's important to know the lake conditions before going out. Now, a system of near-shore buoys provides boaters with information about air and water temperature, wave height, currents, wind direction, and speed.
These are the basic properties of the lakes that a boater might use to decide whether or not the conditions were safe enough to take their boat on the lake.
Kelly Page is the executive director of the Great Lakes Observing System. She says the data is also used by weather forecasters to predict rip currents at beaches and is available for researchers. Find a buoy near you by searching greatlakesbuoys.org. Current Cast, produced with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future, supported by New York's Environmental Protection Fund and Sea Grant. Online at currentcast.org.
Will future roads be paved with plastic? That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
The Keystone Pipeline leaked late last month, spewing nearly 400,000 gallons of heavy tar sands oil into wetlands in North Dakota, and it will be nearly impossible to clean it up.
The oil is a mix of clay, water, and bitumen. To get it to move through the pipeline, it has to be mixed with chemicals that allow it to flow. Without them, pumping the crude would be like sucking peanut butter through a straw.
When a spill occurs, those chemicals evaporate, leaving the heavy bitumen, which sinks, unlike oil spilled in water, which floats and can be skimmed.
But cleaning up wetlands involves digging them up to get at the bitumen that's sunk in, and that risks damaging the area in the process of trying to save it, according to Vice News.
The Keystone Pipeline came online in 2010, carrying crude from Alberta to Texas. It has spilled four times, with the latest spill estimated to be the second largest.
The pipeline was granted an exemption to run at higher than standard pressure in rural areas, and now Reuters reports that permit is in the spotlight.
The Keystone is separate from the planned Keystone XL pipeline, which is still in the permitting process. An attorney for Nebraska homeowners said that the new XL line should not be allowed for a company that has repeated safety failures and frequent spills.
Much of the plastic we use ends up in the ocean, where it could take hundreds of years to break down while causing damage to marine life and ecosystems.
Now, several companies are using recycled bags and bottles to help pave roads. The plastic is ground into flakes, mixed with other ingredients, and then shipped to asphalt manufacturers.
CBS News reports that the blend replaces some of the black oil-based bitumen typically used in paving. According to one of the developers, using plastic saves 1 ton of carbon emissions for every ton of bitumen replaced.
The idea is already being used in San Diego and Houston in this country, and in South Africa, India, and Vietnam.
An environmentalist with the Green Alliance is cautiously optimistic about the process, but said that what they don't know yet is how much microplastic the roads might shed.
However, one manufacturer says there are no microplastics present in any of the roads that are laid down.
Since China stopped buying plastics from recycling programs in the U.S. and other countries, using the bottles and bags in building roads could be a partial solution.
Proponents also claim that the plastic paving lasts longer because it's more flexible. When a vehicle passes over it, the road springs, in contrast to asphalt that doesn't, which can lead to potholes.
Washing machines, bicycles, television sets, a stove, and even a bidet.
That's what divers found when they jumped into the canals of Venice to clean them up. But these aren't just any divers. They are gondoliers who started plunging into the polluted water with only snorkels and diving masks.
But going into the contaminated canals with that limited protection is dangerous. So when local businesses heard of the effort, NBC News reports that they offered proper diving equipment.
The gondoliers-turned-divers have made 5 forays this year, removing 2.5 tons of trash. One of them said they do the dives for free because Venice has given them so much. Children who drink adequate amounts of water have faster reaction times and are better able to multitask.
That's the conclusion of researchers at the University of Illinois and Northeastern University. And they say a large proportion of American kids are actually dehydrated.
The researchers looked at how 9 to 11-year-olds fared on tests that assessed their cognitive abilities after drinking various amounts of water. The results showed a correlation between how much water they consumed and how quickly they responded to tests that required them to switch between different tasks.
Kids are dependent upon adults to get enough water, one of the authors said in a statement from Northeastern. He added that given kids sit in school for 6 hours, a simple solution is to make sure they have water bottles at their desk to promote better hydration. And finally, imagine traveling through a sublime frozen landscape of towering icebergs rising out of turquoise blue waters of the frigid Arctic Ocean. How do you feel? For researchers studying people with chronic pain, they hope the answer is better.
Scientists from Imperial College London had volunteers use virtual reality or VR headsets to watch 360-degree videos of an Arctic exploration. Then they exposed them to painful stimuli, such as a very small electric shock.
The team found that volunteers who watched the scenes of the icy Arctic using VR registered lower pain than those who just saw still images of the polar environment.
The researchers think the result is more than just distraction. They think visual immersion may trigger the body's own natural pain-fighting systems.
Dr. Sam Hughes, lead author of the study, said that one of the key features of chronic pain is an increased sensitivity to stimuli where a person's nerves are constantly firing and telling their brain that they're in a heightened state of distress. He says their work suggests that VR may be able to interrupt that process.
And although the study was small and they need to test other scenes beyond Arctic scenery, the researchers think it shows potential, especially for people with pain who are bedridden or can't move their limbs. VR might offer a new form of relief, along with a view of some awe-inspiring places on Earth. That's it for this week in water. You can sustain this newscast by going to h2oradio.org, where your gift will be doubled dollar for dollar now until December 31st.
This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association, whose North American Water Loss Conference will showcase innovative solutions December 3rd through 5th in Nashville. Get the details at awwa.org/waterloss.
Right.